How's it going, folks? You are very welcome to A History of Change, the podcast. In this episode, we are going to focus on life in Ireland during World War II. And we're going to look at life in the Free State during the emergency and life in Northern Ireland during the war as well. Okay, so I suppose just to differentiate between both of them, firstly, the Irish Free State, the 26 counties in the south of Ireland, that time period was known as the emergency, okay? And that only really refers to the 26 counties in the south of Ireland because of the Emergency Powers Act that was passed by the government at the time, okay? So to look in detail at life in the Irish Free State, at the time, following the outbreak of World War II, Ireland was very reliant on British imports of food, fuel and fertilizer. And Ireland very quickly faced a shortage of these items because of German U-boat attacks on British shipping. It meant that there was less shipping getting into Ireland, and a lot of these foodstuffs were also being diverted away from places like Ireland to soldiers on the front lines. To try and cope with the shortage of food, rationing was introduced on items like bread, butter, tea, and sugar. And how this worked is people were given ration books, okay? And these books contained coupons which could be exchanged for certain items in shop. So for example, you had a certain amount of bread you could buy per week, okay? And you could not go over that amount of bread, all right? Because you had to, the only way you could purchase bread is by exchanging a coupon for your ration book, and you might have had one coupon for the week. Now, what actually did happen was a black market occurred where people began to trade stuff. So a packet of cigarettes could be traded for a loaf of bread. So people kind of got around the rationing in that way a little bit. Now, to try and become less reliant on Britain during the war, Sean Lamass became Minister for Supplies in 1939, and he was very significant because he established a company called Irish Shipping in 1941 to ensure consistent supplies into the country. And what they did is they bought a number of ships to bring in food into Ireland, and it meant that we weren't reliant on other countries like Britain for food. Sean Lamass would also bring in a compulsory tillage order, meaning that Irish farmers had to allocate a certain amount of their land to the growing of wheat, because I suppose they could get the most yields and the most food from growing wheat. Frank Aiken became the Minister for Coordination of Defensive Measures. Okay, so it was his job to organise the defence of the Irish Free State, and they as well played a role in censorship. Okay, so certain documents and newspapers would be censored, so it meant and showed that Ireland was not favouring either side of the war. In terms of defensive measures such as huge ire signs were placed around Ireland's coastline to warn German bombers that they were over neutral Ireland. Small concrete pillboxes were also put in place along places like bridges and rivers as kind of a defensive feature for soldiers to use in the event of an attack. Oil and coal also became very scarce. Ireland did not produce any oil and coal. Well, 1942, privately owned cars were banned on Irish roads. The only people that could really use cars were doctors, vets, and priests as well. A lot of people began to use bicycles as well as horse and car transport to get around, and harvesting turf and burning that to heat the homes became, I suppose, commonplace in Ireland again. The government were keen to clamp down on the illegal burning of fuel, and they employed inspectors who were known as glimmer men, and they patrolled towns and cities throughout Ireland to check for illegal use of coal and gas during the war. They were actually legally allowed to enter people's homes, place their hand on the gas stove to see if they had been recently used or if they were warm. Now, despite Ireland's neutrality, south of Ireland was attacked numerous times during the war. Now, we're not really sure why. Some people think it may be seen as a warning from the Germans because we were providing some small bits of help and intelligence to the British. Others think it may have been by a mistake. So, on the 26th of August 1940, three women were killed when German bombs fell on the village of Campbell, County Wexford. Probably the worst bombing occurred on the night of the 31st of May 1941 when the North Strand in Dublin was bombed by the German Luftwaffe. 28 people were killed, 90 were injured and 300 homes were severely destroyed as a result of the North Strand bombings. As well as bombings, many German spies also parachuted into Ireland or arrived by submarine to link up with IRA members. Both the IRA and Nazi Germany had a common enemy in Britain, and I suppose the old saying, "the enemy of my enemy is my friend," comes into play here. The most well-known of these spies was a man called Hermann Goertz, who parachuted into County Meath in 1940. Now, he spent about 19 months at large in Ireland. Okay, now many people believe that the Irish government actually let him, they kind of secretly followed him for these 19 months, and they let him link up with IRA members because it basically would show the Irish government who the IRA members were and they could then be arrested. The IRA and Nazis had actually been secretly planning an invasion of Northern Ireland called Plan Cathleen, while the Nazis had planned their own invasion of the south of Ireland called Plan Green. So if we look at Northern Ireland during World War II, their experience would be quite different to the south of Ireland. So because Northern Ireland was part of the United Kingdom, they would be fully supporting the war effort on the Allied side. Belfast was one of the biggest industrial cities in the world in the early to mid 20th century, and they would be vital when it came to producing materials, ships and other things for the Allies. So Belfast was home to Harland and Wolff Shipyard. It was one of the largest shipyards in the world, of course famous for building the Titanic. During the war, Harland and Wolff built about 140 warships, 123 merchant ships and about 500 tanks for the Allies. Short Brothers aircraft manufacturers were also based in Belfast. They produced numerous types of aircraft for the Royal Air Force, such as Stirling bombers and seaplanes. Belfast was also home to a very large linen industry, and again, this expanded to meet the demands of the war. So factories like Ewart's in Belfast produced uniforms, parachutes, bootlaces and tents for the Allies. Agriculture prospered in Northern Ireland during the war. Arable farming, which is crop farming, increased by about 60%. Flax production increased sixfold, while about 20% of British eggs came from Northern Ireland. The government in Britain provided Northern Irish farmers with farm machinery and tractors and fertilisers in an effort to, meet the demands of the war. Strategically, Northern Ireland was also an important place for the Allies. So Northern Irish ports and airfields were really important for the Allies. A lot of the Allied materials for the war came from America, and it meant that they had to cross the Atlantic Ocean to reach Europe. This is very dangerous because a lot of German U-boats were attacking these convoys. So Northern Ireland was the most, one of the most westerly locations the Allies had where they could patrol the Atlantic from. So Sunderland flying boats stationed in our Fermanagh had a very important role in escorting shipping convoys in the Atlantic Ocean. McGee College in Derry also became the US Naval Communications Headquarters of Europe. Because of the location of Northern Ireland, Allied soldiers were also stationed here during preparation for Allied invasions of North Africa and Europe. The countryside in Northern Ireland was very similar to that of France, so it provided the perfect training ground for D-Day landings. By 1943, almost 300,000 British, American and Canadian military personnel were based in Northern Ireland. Now, as Northern Ireland was actively playing a part in the war effort, it was a legitimate target for the Germans. So, up until 1941, Belfast hadn't been targeted by German bombers. The government in Northern Ireland mistakenly believed that Belfast was too far away to be targeted. However, this changed following the fall of France, because now German bombers could take off from France and were within range of Belfast. Unfortunately, the government in Northern Ireland made very, very few efforts to, protect Belfast, install anti-aircraft guns and things like that. So as a result, it was an easy target. Because of its wartime industries, it was also a very legitimate target. As we know, Harland and Wolff had been producing tanks, planes, ships for the Allies. In April and May of 1941, Belfast was bombed four times by the Luftwaffe. many Belfast factories like Harland and Wolff were severely damaged. Unfortunately, due to the proximity of civilian housing to the factories, casualties were extremely high. So at the time, a lot of people lived within walking distance to the factories. Okay, there was rows and rows of terraced houses, and these houses were badly, badly damaged. About 1,100 people were killed and 56,000 homes were destroyed. Eamon de Valera sent fire engines from the south to help those in Belfast. In the months following the bombings, thousands of people left Belfast every night, sleeping rough in the countryside for fear of another bombing. Others moved to the south of the border to neutral Ireland as refugees.